This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran's leader says the Muslim world can claim its rightful place in global geopolitics through unity and overcoming the temptations of enemies. Another bloody day in the occupied West Bank. The Israeli military attacks Jenin refugee camp, opening fire on Palestinian youth and medics. And in France, refinery strikes that have caused gas stations to go dry are now spreading to nuclear sites. Hello and welcome your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says a unipolar global order is no longer acceptable in today's world and is gradually losing its legitimacy. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said in a unipolar system, arrogant powers such as the United States would design their own schemes and dictate them to other countries such as Iraq, Syria, Iran, or Lebanon. The leader, however, pointed out that a domination of a certain few states is changing. He said that the people of the world are awakening to the truth of those powers and are opposed to one or two states bullying others into obedience. Ayatollah Khamenei also noted that the Muslim world can claim its rightful place in global geopolitics through unity and overcoming the temptations of enemies, especially the U.S. and Israel. He said to have unity, Muslims should work together to preserve their common interests and thwart the plots by arrogant powers. Ayatollah Khamenei was speaking at the meeting with the participants in the Islamic Unity Conference, which was held in Tehran in recent days. To discuss that further, we're joined by Mr. Masoud Shajarei from the Islamic Human Rights Commission. Mr. Shajarei, please shed more light on the leader's remarks about the inevitable demise of the unilateral world order. And how exactly is this hegemonic status of the United States waning?
Well, it really is now very clear for everyone to see that what has come in the last years as a result of policy of United States and Western world, in not just in the region of Middle East, but everywhere else. I mean, look, it's very easy. Just look at Afghanistan, look at Iraq, look at Syria, look at Libya. You see that there is a destruction, total destruction of the civil society, destruction of the infrastructure, and what they have replaced it with is really chaotic and sort of an environment where it's not fit for ordinary human beings to live. You know, it really is outrageous what the solution of the West under the leadership of United States and Israel has been, is to destroy any harmony and create havoc, and which has been a breeding ground for extremist terrorist entities, which have been unleashed not just against West. In reality, you know, Daesh wasn't against the West. Daesh was killing ordinary, innocent civilians in their own area. You know, they were actually predominantly Muslims and other minorities being slaughtered. And this environment was created by the United States, by Israel. And in some way, it seems that what they want chaos in the region, so they will flourish. You know, the apartheid system to have to flourish, to have no objections against is illegal occupation and apartheid nature, racist nature of it. And look at even United States. In United States, what United States policy is to look after 1% of its citizens and oppress the rest. And 1% getting all the resources, all the finances, all the power, and the other 99% get practically nothing. They're second class in their own country. And the solution is that the Muslims to come together. Muslims, in reality, are on receiving end of all these oppression, and they need to unite and they need to stand.
So, Mr. Sajjadeh, the leader attributed the crimes committed against Palestinians today to the discord among Muslims and talked about Iran's efforts to preserve Muslim unity through its continued support for the people of Palestine. What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I mean, people of Palestine, people of Kashmir, people in the rest of the region who are being oppressed day in, day out, and the matter is getting worse rather than getting better. See the unity of Muslims as an essential element to sort of stop this oppression. And the Palestinians are getting attacked day in, day out. If we got the last apartheid system now operating proudly and being supported by United States and the West to implement its barbaric action against ordinary Palestinians, and to legitimize that and to have that as a model for the rest of the region, it really is outrageous. And if anything, Muslims looking at what is happening on the ground and the command of Allah on a theological level have got really no choice whatsoever except coming and uniting to stand against injustice in the area and beyond.
Thank you very much. That was Mr. Masoud Sajjadeh from the Islamic Human Rights Commission in London. Iran has been hosting the Conference on Islamic Unity for several days now, and this event could not have happened at a better time when it comes to the issue of Palestine. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has told the conference that Palestine remains at the forefront for Muslims and that the path of resistance needs to be continued to prevail over the Zionist regime.
Iran is hosting the 36th International Conference on Islamic Unity in the capital, Tehran, which hosts 200 Shia and Sunni clerics, as well as thinkers from some 60 different countries. The annual event puts into discussion the challenges faced by the Muslim world. It's widely believed that uniting Muslims in the region and worldwide would be a great step in alleviating the problems they're facing. Violence and wars are killing Muslims in Yemen, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria. Imam Khomeini, the late founder of the Islamic Republic, proposed the idea in the 1980s to bring Muslims together against the imperialist aggressions and interventions of Western powers. Over the years, Iran has championed the cause of Islamic unity and brotherhood. This is when many other Muslim countries have brazenly become facilitators and enablers of America's neo-imperialism. The highlight of this year's event was a speech by Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi to the participants of the conference. During his speech, President Raisi hailed resistance as the only viable path to confronting the Israeli regime. Raisi further said that history has proven wrong those countries who assumed that negotiations would save Palestine. The biggest human rights violators are the US, Israel, and some Western countries, despite their claims to be human rights defenders. See their record, what they have done to their own people and the people around the globe.
Raisi also referred to previous deals reached with the Tel Aviv regime on the issue of Palestine, saying the regime has refused to honor the commitments it has made. He also criticized the Arab governments that normalized their ties with Israel under the Zionist regime. He said the U.S. and the Israeli regime are trying to marginalize Palestinians through normalization deals. Raisi was referring to the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Sudan and Morocco, which normalized their ties with Israel in late 2020 under deals pushed by former U.S. President Donald Trump.
The Palestinian issue has been one of the most important topics discussed at the conference. The occupation of Palestinian land has been highlighted as the greatest peril facing the Muslim world and the biggest obstacle in the path towards Islamic unity. This year, the Israeli regime is setting records when it comes to the killing of Palestinians. Over 100 fatalities so far, illegal detentions, destruction of property and other violations have also continued unabated.
One of the issues that was highlighted in this conference was how Muslims in Palestine are brutally oppressed by the Israeli regime, which is supported by the West and some regional Arab states that have betrayed the cause of Palestine. The normalization deals with the Israeli regime has emboldened Tel Aviv to carry out more war crimes in the occupied Palestinian territories.
It's no surprise to us that the House of Saud has teamed up with the Israeli regime. They claim to be Muslims, but in fact they are the puppets of the Israelis and do what Tel Aviv dictates to them.
So far this year, more than 100 Palestinians have been killed in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds amid a massive increase in Israeli military raids. Israel has killed five times as many Palestinians in 2022 than it killed in the same period in 2021. And on the issue of Palestinian prisoners, nearly 300 rights groups have condemned the continued detention of Palestinians in Israeli prisons. They called on the international community to act against the crimes of Israel. The groups also censured Israel for its administrative detention of Palestinians. Conferences like the one held in Iran helped the Palestinian cause by continuing to point to the atrocities committed by the Israeli regime. If the Palestinian cause is not the most important issue for Muslims and the wider world, then Israeli forces will continue using excessive force in their dealings with the Palestinians without being held accountable.
Welcome back. The streets of the occupied West Bank become the scene of a somber farewell to another young Palestinian killed by Israeli forces during a raid in the Flashpoint refugee camp in Jenin earlier today. The 21-year-old Matin Sabaya was shot dead during the raid. Also, a Palestinian doctor identified as Abdullah Abutin was shot while attending to the injured. He is currently in critical condition and undergoing surgery. Eight others have also been wounded. Separately, Mohammad Maher Turkman, the Palestinian who carried out an operation injuring seven Israeli soldiers in September, has died of his injuries in the hospital. Israel has intensified its deadly crackdown in the occupied territories, killing more than 100 Palestinians so far this year. From Ramallah, our correspondent Mona Kandel tells us more about the volatile situation in the West Bank. Let's take a listen.
The Israeli forces said the operation is meant to arrest Palestinians wanted for security reasons. As we are speaking now, we're receiving that hundreds of Palestinians are taking part in the funeral procession of the young man Matin Dababa in the Jenin refugee camp, and the operation is still going on. All entrances to Nablus city that is the first city while on the way to Jenin, is completely closed. All military checkpoints are closed there. Palestinians are not allowed to enter Nablus and Jenin areas. We have to mention that this is happening in the last few days in search for a Palestinian who carried out a shooting operation on Tuesday, and the Israeli forces are still searching for this Palestinian man whom killed an Israeli soldier near an illegal settlement near Nablus.
As the entire Europe races to prepare for an energy crunch this winter, France seems to have more on its plate with widespread industrial strikes. Staff at six nuclear plants are now joining an earlier walkout by refinery workers. A union representing energy workers says maintenance work at nine nuclear reactors has been halted. It says that two other plants have also reduced output. More workers at other nuclear sites are planning to join the strikes over the weekend. The move could threaten power output at a time when Paris is trying to restart its nuclear reactors to alleviate a looming energy crisis this winter. Refinery workers have also been striking for almost 3 weeks, causing many gas stations to go dry. The CGT union, which initiated the industrial action, has vowed to continue the walkouts after failing to agree with oil giant Total Energy's overpay. NATO defense ministers pledged to send advanced weapons to Ukraine until such a time as Kiev wins its war against Russia. Peace campaigners say the only way to end the conflict is through diplomatic efforts. Jerome Hughes reports.
There was no mention of peace talks to end the conflict in Ukraine as NATO defense ministers met in Brussels on Thursday. Spain, one of 30 NATO countries, has pledged to supply Kiev with advanced air defense systems.
This comes on top of what other allies have delivered over the last few days. I thank all allies for their significant contributions, and I urge them to continue to step up.
Ukraine's defense minister, Oleksiy Reznikov, attended the meeting in Brussels. While he's in Belgium, who's running things back in Kiev? It's a question we put to one expert during an online interview.
The Americans, because the Americans said we are offering intelligence information, we are coordinating the flow of weapons. They direct the battlefield. They have satellites under the disposal of their military.
NATO says it has doubled the number of its battle groups in eastern regions of the alliance. More than 30 warships are patrolling the Baltic Sea and North Sea. Critics say this steady build-up in recent years is designed to provoke Russia and keep NATO relevant while pumping trillions into the arms industry. NATO's Article 5 states that an attack on one member of the alliance is an attack on all of its members. NATO says Russia's nuclear forces are being closely monitored. The alliance confirms it's going ahead with nuclear war deterrence exercises next week, dubbed Steadfast Noon. The drills will involve nuclear-capable aircraft, but apparently will not include any live bombs. Asked if the timing is bad given heightened tensions, NATO boss Jens Stoltenberg said it would send out the wrong signal if the exercises were suddenly cancelled now. Jerome Hughes, NATO headquarters, Brussels.
And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Virtues of the Believers, Friday the 3rd of Ramadan, 1394, the 20th of September, 1974. Faith that sits still like stagnant water in the heart of a believer is meaningless. Someone might learn a formula as a child, and as a result of the doubts they feel as they grow up, it cannot penetrate the hardness of their heart. So it shrinks, withers, and fades. A sort of half-faith or half-truth remains in their hearts, but this grows dimmer and dimmer with the passage of time. Such faith can be easily taken from a person. It is a surface faith. But a true believer is not like this. A true believer is someone who, if a single word of truth and knowledge of Allah or religion enters his heart, he will ponder on it, examine it, and think about it, and anything that comes to the aid of that word will cause their faith to grow. This faith cannot be erased, and the person who has it is a true believer. From this verse and from this sentence, we can deduce that when a faithful human being recites the Quran, their faith should increase. This sentence is proof of something. Pay close attention to Allah's words here, and you will see that.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
There are those who say, "Do not translate the Quran, do not explain the Quran, do not comment on the Quran, our intellects cannot understand it." To those people we say, if we cannot understand the Quran, then how will the Quran increase our faith in Allah? It is clear that the Quran is not a book of codes. The Quran is a book that is supposed to be read in order to be understood, and understood in order that it increases and strengthens one's faith. And when his signs are recited to them, they increase their faith. This is the second condition of being a true believer. Next, the verse says, "And who put their trust in their Lord." This is the third mark of the true believer, that he places his trust in Allah and relies on Him. What does trust in Allah, tawakkul, mean? Does it mean to fold your arms and say, "Allah will take care of it"? No, this is not placing one's trust in Allah. Someone who folds their arms instead of undertaking their duties, obligations, and responsibilities, instead of using their own abilities, and instead expect Allah to work a miracle on their behalf, such a person should know that the Quran utterly rejects this attitude. Allah delivers a harsh rebuke to the Israelites who told Musa, "Go ahead, you and your Lord, and fight. We will be sitting right here." Surah 5, verse 24. In other words, "You go and fight our enemies and let us know when you've won. Then we'll come." The Quran rejects this utterly. This approach is that of the Israelites, whom Allah cursed and denied the joys of faith.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Is be true to what you said on paper.
We won't back down.
Stop the witches.
Turn here now.
We will resist.
I can't breathe. Help me. Please.
We the people.
democracy. It depends on people voting. Voting depends on people being informed. And the press, it's here to keep the people informed, right? Very simple. But there's a problem. People in the U.S. do not trust the media. The news is questioned, doubted, and not believed by millions of people, and that is a challenge for democracy.
In media, we don't trust.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to We the People. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. In this episode, we'll discuss growing distrust among Americans toward the media. We're now in a place where people do not trust the news, where people do not know where to find the news, and what to think of it when they finally do find it. So, how do we get here? What impact does the media distrust have on American society? And what is it about the media that now many people distrust? As usual, we're pleased to have our two guests on our show, Ben Norton, an independent journalist and editor of Multipolarista, who's joining us from Managua, Nicaragua, and Shabir Rizvi, organizer with the Party for Socialism and Liberation, who's joining us from Chicago. Stay tuned.
Trusting government in its institutions and media is essential to the functioning of democracy in any country. Yet today, trust is declining. A recent poll by Rasmussen Reports shows that most voters believe fake news is a serious problem and don't trust the political news they get from the media.
And now 62% of likely U.S. voters think the problem of bias in the news media is getting worse. Just 10% believe the media bias problem is actually getting better. Now, this is certainly not good news. Other polls have come up with the same alarming figures. Now, let's put these numbers into some sort of perspective. What are the underlying reasons of this declining mistrust today?
Why is that? These media outlets have a long history of lying. For decades, these main media outlets have lied to sell U.S. wars, to justify regime change operations, meddling in foreign countries, and they've also lied about domestic politics. In the U.S., the media is extremely partisan. Pretty much every media outlet is firmly associated with either the Republican Party or the Democratic Party, and they usually don't publish information that can rock the boat and hurt the interests of those political parties.
So the phenomenon of the public's perception of the media has been relatively consistent for over a decade, and we're not talking about a specific period or a specific president. Americans have had trust issues with the media for many years. So how did they get here? Isn't it a bit surprising the issue of declining trust has not been resolved?
It's no surprise that people don't trust the media. People are starting to wake up that, like, you know, there's a lot of special interest groups. There's a lot of mega corporations that have a huge influence on the media. And the media itself is also very partisan, right? It's no secret that CNN and MSNBC are very close to the Democrats, that Fox News is very close to the Republicans. And you also have to understand that, you know, news media here isn't even just the facts, right? It's a Google search away. The New York Times has sent, you know, its stories sometimes to the Pentagon, to the State Department to get approval. So right then and there, news media isn't even independent, right? It's very dependent on all these different groups, whether that's a corporation or an arm of the government.
The low trust is the result of years of self-inflicted wounds by the media themselves. Bias, blunders, and superficiality. And this, of course, plays into election campaigns, because when media fact-check the candidates, people don't believe them. When the media reports on the candidates, people think that they don't get the straight scoop.
And then when it comes to the election of Donald Trump in 2016, the media blamed Russia with no evidence. Of course, these false claims came from the CIA and U.S. intelligence agencies. And people, you know, after being lied to so long, they can see clearly that the corporate media outlets in the U.S. serve the economic and political interests of, one, the billionaire capitalists who own the media, And then, of course, the U.S. government itself and the political interests of the political parties that the media outlets are aligned with.
Here is a clip from President Joe Biden's speech that kind of wraps up the climate of distrust in the country. Let's watch it.
Last summer, I was in Philadelphia and I met a small business owner, a woman. I asked her, I said, "What do you need most?" Never forget what she said to me. She said, looking me in the eye, she said, "I just want the truth. The truth. Just tell me the truth." Think of that. My fellow Americans, you're owed nothing less than the truth.
People are wary of bias. Fed up with getting lied to, and like the woman in Joe Biden's story, they just want the truth. They don't know how to find it, where to find it. Truth has become a rare commodity. They seem confused. The problem is that some of these lies have been very costly for the public, like the reason for the war in Iraq that led to many Americans getting killed in action.
When it comes to foreign policy, media outlets in the U.S. frequently lie and spread propaganda to justify U.S. wars of aggression. We saw this with the illegal U.S. invasion of Iraq. The media was used to spread lies about so-called weapons of mass destruction. We saw this with the NATO war in Libya in 2011. The U.S. media spread lies claiming that Muammar Gaddafi, the Libyan leader, was giving Viagra to his soldiers and encouraging them to assault women. That was completely false. The war in Syria, we saw a lot of lies with the war in Yemen, the war in Afghanistan. There are constantly lies.
And now this pattern of distrust shows a rather interesting aspect. People trust the local government more than the state government, and the state government more than the federal government. Is this pattern true when it comes to the media as well, and why is it so if that's the case?
In general, yes, you could probably say that people in the U.S. trust local and state government more than federal government, but really, even trust in local government is not much higher. And why is that? It's because at the federal level, the national level in the United States, everyone knows that people who have more money win. If you're rich, you can basically buy a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. In congressional races in the United States, more than 90% of candidates who have more money win. And the media is very similar. If you're a billionaire oligarch, if you're very wealthy, you can buy a media outlet. Jeff Bezos, the richest person on earth, who's the founder of Amazon, estimated wealth of $200 billion, he bought the Washington Post. It's his property. So in the United States, it's an ultra-capitalist society. If you're rich, you can buy the media. If you're rich, you can basically buy yourself a position in government. And that's why people don't trust these institutions.
Interestingly, we see that many Americans now say that they're losing trust on the church, the medical system, the presidency, the Supreme Court, and Congress. Public faith in each of these institutions has fallen this decade. We are now seeing people who are becoming more and more localized. Seems like they don't care about what is happening in the broader picture. They care less about the big stories, be it national or international, although some of those stories might drastically influence their lives.
The higher you go up the chain from local all the way to federal, or rather national, the more special interest groups, the more lobbies, the more people with money that you'll run into that have an influence on whether you are a politician, for example, or whether you're a major news corporation, right? Because, you know, the more people that you are able to kind of influence, you'll find more money in there, right? And so when people are saying that they trust, you know, local media more than, you know, national media, that makes sense.
Fake news. The term recalls different pictures for different people. For many, it is Donald Trump who labeled virtually anything that was against him as fake news.
Fake news.
Fake, disgusting news.
The fake media.
And the fake news refuse to call it, right?
So for some people, it is rather spooky. For some, it has lost its meaning. But one thing is for certain, that fake news is now ubiquitous. It's everywhere. Where does this overwhelming volume of misinformation come from?
Is fake news a problem in the U.S.? Well, it exists in every country. But I think one of the reasons that there's so much fixation on fake news is because the ruling elites in the United States, the billionaire oligarchs and the politicians they fund, refuse to admit why they're unpopular. Instead, they try to blame so-called fake news. They blame Russia, they blame China, they blame Iran. The reality is that life is getting worse for average working people in the U.S. Life expectancy is decreasing. We now see that for the first time, a younger generation is having a worse life than their parents. Poverty is increasing. Homelessness is increasing. And fake news is a scapegoat. Instead of saying that people don't want to vote for these corrupt politicians because they don't do anything to make people's lives better, they say fake news is the real problem. Of course, fake news does exist. But the reality is that when we look at the corporate media is full of propaganda and disinformation. They don't call it fake news because it's serving the interests of the U.S. government.
And now ratings for cable television news, conservatives and liberals alike, went up during the Trump presidency, but the numbers plummeted under Joe Biden's presidency.
The ratings are up. It means you can't do without Donald Trump. You would be lost without Donald Trump.
Well, that is what he says.
Ted, you know that's not true.
CNN's ratings would be in the toilet without Donald Trump.
You know that's not true. You're playing for laughs. You've lived through enough presidencies to know.
Hold on a second,
there will be more presidents.
What were the ratings before Trump, and what are the ratings now?
I would say we might be up 20%. We might be up 30%. We might be up 40%. If we go back down 40%, that's okay, too.
Well, it may not be okay.
Of course it is.
The interesting thing here is that in both periods, trust was declining. So that meant they were gaining audience but losing trust. This pattern indicates that people are now looking at news as some form of entertainment. It also means that media like CNN, who dislike Trump, would be at least deep down very happy if he gets re-elected again, simply because Trump means ratings go up. And that's really strange.
Yeah, I think it mainly has to do with, you know, leaving out information or kind of giving out half-truths to things, right? It's the way they kind of frame stories that causes this misinformation, where all this misinformation happens from. You can say one thing, but leave out an entire, like, historical analysis of it that kind of frames things incorrectly, that makes people think a certain way or another.
It's one thing to hear something that isn't true. It's another to believe it. It's these beliefs that lead to action, which can have both positive and negative repercussions. After all, propaganda is only successful to the extent that it spreads. But why is it that so many people seem to get fooled by the fake news they are bombarded with?
People in the U.S. can sometimes get fooled about issues because the education system is very bad, and the media is certainly not teaching people what's actually happening. There's so much propaganda. People are brainwashed from the very day they're born to hate China, to hate Russia, to hate Iran, to hate communism, to love capitalism, to love imperialism. And also, racism is a huge part of this. There's a lot of internalized racism. So when it comes to learning about other countries, there are racist stereotypes that are taught that other countries are so-called authoritarian or backward, and the so-called Western democracies are progressive and they're supporting human rights. It's a lot of propaganda. And when you, from the very day you're born, if you're just bombarded with that propaganda day in, day out, 24/7 in the media and the education system, it's very easy to deceive people and convince them with propaganda to support whatever war or aggression the U.S. empire wants to commit this week.
Now, many Americans share fake news on social media because they're simply not paying attention to whether that content is correct. Some of these false stories can be very dangerous as it causes people to change their behavior. Now, this is why medical disinformation was so concerning during the COVID pandemic. So why is it the U.S. public seems to be so ignorant regarding the facts?
Yeah, ignorant isn't the word I would use. I would use the word misinformed, to some extent even indoctrinated. From the moment Americans are born, they are subject to the most immense indoctrination campaign probably in history, right? Everything from, you know, Hollywood action movies to what they see on TV to the education Americans receive is part of this, you know, American exceptionalism, so-called exceptionalism, that is kind of hardwired into Americans at some point. And so when, you know, Americans come off as ignorant, right, it's mostly because of all of this indoctrination that they've received, and they don't have any, you know, mainstream news outlets or some formal education to kind of break them out of it.
There are a lot of partisan folks out there who don't have any interest in journalist fairness. They want their preferred media to either back their candidate or trash the other candidate or both. A Pew survey suggests that 95% of MSNBC's audience is now Democrats, while 93% of the Fox News audience is Republicans. It seems as if that instead of voters being shaped by news, news is being shaped for voters.
The media in the United States is completely polarized based on one faction of the two corporate imperialist parties, the Democrats and the Republicans. And Republicans tend to watch Republican media outlets and read Republican media outlets like Fox News or The Washington Times. And Democrats tend to watch MSNBC and read The New York Times. And that it's not new. In many countries around the world, there is this kind of polarization. But in the United States, it's extreme. These media outlets do not in any way pretend to be neutral. And they're not neutral. They're extreme propaganda. And this leads people to just basically go along with whatever media outlets they prefer.
There are two Americas now, each listening to its own preferred news sources. Two parallel public realities. People only want to watch what they already agree with.
I read stories like that all the time, too. It's very unfortunate. I think it's honestly just a testament to how much, you know, the American government just does not care about education, does not care about kind of sustaining its own population of creating like an intelligent workforce. Rather, the education system here is crumbling, right? Where there's the majority of people state to state, like, you know, in urban centers, we see education funding being pulled. We see resources being pulled, and, you know, all that money goes to like cops or the military.
Maybe it is hard for the ordinary people to see this destructive pattern of polarization in the media and its consequences. But what about the media outlets themselves? They're made up of people who are professional journalists, pollsters, and writers, and so on. For this, they can see this destructive pattern. So why is it that they do not try to inform the public about it and stop this kind of behavior?
We should keep in mind that these media outlets belong to billionaire capitalist oligarchs who are making money off of this. So it's not just a problem of polarization. It's a problem of the very structure of the corporate media. It's corporate. It's not about informing people. It's about making money. Informing people is secondary. The first, most important thing is making money. And you make money by serving the political interests of the U.S. State Department, of the military-industrial complex, and in one of the two political parties. You pick one of the parties, and you serve their interests, and you make money from it. So all of these problems are simply byproducts of the undemocratic capitalist system in the United States, in which if you're rich, you can control society. You can buy influence in the political system, you can buy the media, and you can tell people what to think.
The war in Ukraine is rather a good example of media coverage and how it shapes people's minds about what is going on. Pretty much who is winning the war in Ukraine depends on who is doing the talking. The US public is generally said that authoritarian Russia cannot be trusted with the facts, let alone the truth about the war. So we, meaning the Western media, have to be trusted to carry on the news.
The proxy war in Ukraine is a great example of the power of propaganda in the corporate media. We see that media outlets in the U.S. refuse to acknowledge facts that are undeniable. Like, for instance, the United States backed a violent coup that overthrew Ukraine's democratically elected government in 2014. That fact is conveniently left out of basically all media. Instead, corporate media outlets portray Russia as this crazy imperialist country that just wanted to invade Ukraine because Putin is supposedly evil or whatever ridiculous nonsense. They ignore the fact that the United States started a civil war in Ukraine back in 2014, and that according to the United Nations, 14,000 Ukrainians died in that Western-fueled war between 2014 and the end of 2021.
The one-sided story being told by the US media about the war in Ukraine means that anyone trying to come up with a different narrative will be simply outcast as Russia sympathizer, far left, or far right fanatic.
When Russia invaded Ukraine, for example, the news media completely failed to mention why they were even there in the first place. They failed to mention, you know, the expansion of NATO eastward. This is for decades now. They failed to mention the U.S.-backed coup that happened 8 years ago. They failed to mention that Ukraine has been bombing the Donbass region for 8 years. But instead, what they did was they kind of framed this as like an invasion that happened for no reason, just because Russia is supposedly a bully, right?
Now, if anyone tries to underline these underreported aspects of the war and slam the policy of the U.S. and its allies towards the war, they would be labeled in the mainstream media as narrow-minded people who do not see the big picture.
The U.S. and European countries were sending billions of dollars of military assistance and weapons to Ukraine before Russia sent a single troop in on February 24th of 2022. All of that history is erased by the media. And the media portrays the conflict as a supposed battle between good and evil, democracy and authoritarianism. They don't mention that the Ukrainian regime is extremely undemocratic, that it banned opposition parties, that all socialist and communist opposition parties have been banned, that opposition media outlets in Ukraine were shut down. They don't mention any of those facts.
Another international story that is often distorted on the U.S. media is the issue of Palestine. Almost no day goes by without regime troops committing a horrible crime against Palestinians, and there is no boundary to these atrocities. Children as young as 5 are arrested and put in jail. Women and elderly are shot. Residents are forced to destroy their houses with their own hands. And yet, Israel's image has remained positive among both party groups.
The reason that there is still support among the U.S. public for apartheid Israel is because most people in the U.S. don't know anything about Israel. Apartheid Israel is simply portrayed as a democracy, even though it's not in any way a democracy. The fact that it's an apartheid regime that systematically violates the rights of Palestinians, that colonizes Palestinian land, illegally occupies Palestinian land, that's never mentioned in the media. And the reality is that many people in the United States, they only learn about this information from the media. So yes, they are propagandized. That's why they don't know what's actually happening. They get all of this propaganda spoon-fed to them through corporate media outlets that support the apartheid Israeli regime and oppose the rights of Palestinians. They don't know that the apartheid Israeli regime constantly murders Palestinian journalists and children and doctors and nurses and illegally steals and occupies their land and is committing ethnic cleansing and genocide.
Now, as a declining trust towards the media shows no signs of improving, U.S. public just goes from one episode of extremism to the next. Now, there was once talk about political divisions, but it seems like now we're far past that. People are now talking about political tribalism. Some have even gone further, saying we are in political sectarianism, where people hate the opposing group more than loving their own base. And the trace of corrupt media can be found in all these stories. And that was our show, everyone. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. And do join us again next time for another episode of We the People. Bye-bye for now. We'll be right back.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Savior.
Oh, the Savior of mankind, please show us a sign.
To the designer of the human civilization that is established on the unity of Almighty Allah. To the redeemer of human volition and thought.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, welcome to IRIB English Radio. You're listening to The Last Savior, in which we discuss all the essential key points regarding the concept of Mahdawiyyah and the last savior of humankind, Imam Mahdi ajalallah farajah. And for today's episode, we're privileged to have the Islamic researcher, Dr. Karimi, with us. Assalamu alaikum, doctor, and glad to have you here.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
Of course, the pleasure is all ours. Well, dear listeners, we've been having some sessions talking about the governance of Imam Mahdi. May Allah hasten his reappearance. We talked about economical, political justice. We talked about popularity and the love that everyone shares to his governance. And also we talked about the fact that his government is going to be universal, and he's going to rule through peace and justice. So still we have some more of points to talk about. And as for today, we come to the point that is related to safety and security and what we know as protection. So, Doctor, shall you please elaborate on that fact? How is it going to feel to live in such a realm?
Again, another problem that we are suffering in our time and era, and maybe for the whole history of mankind, is the feeling of insecurity. And again, it has many dimensions. It might be in terms of, I mean, we are talking about financial security,
yeah,
or cultural one, or intellectual one, economic one, or military one, and even
from
psychological
minor
one
to major ones.
Exactly. And when we are talking about the peace of mind, which many of
which
us
which is the most important security that we wish for.
So one of the points regarding the time and government of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam is that we will have safety and security in, again, in all these aspects and dimensions. So people will not feel insecurity in any of its kind that I refer to. A very famous verse in the Noble Book of Quran, chapter An-Nur, verse 55, which according to many narrations is referring to the time of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam.
Mm-hmm.
The verse reads, A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. وعد الله الذين آمنوا منكم وعملوا الصالحات. Allah has promised those of you who have faith and do righteous deeds لا يستخلفنهم في الأرض كما استخلف الذين من قبلهم, that He will surely make them successors in the earth just as He made those who were before them successors. ولا يمكنن لهم دينهم الذي ارتضى لهم, and He will surely establish for them the religion which He has approved for them. And وَلَيُبَدِّلَنَّهُمْ مِنْ بَعْدِ خَوْفِهِمْ أَمْنًا, and He will surely change their state to security after their fear. Mm-hmm. Now, many narrations, as I mentioned, refer to the fact that this verse specifically is talking about the time of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam and his reappearance. And one of the points mentioned in this verse is that وَلَيُبَدِّلَنَّهُمْ مِنْ بَعْدِ خَوْفِهِمْ أَمْنًا. Before that, people had a kind of fear, and khawf, as I said, may refer to any kind of fear and insecurity. Yeah. But now you have amna, you have security in all its forms. So, I mean, we have some narrations. For example, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, نَزَلَتْ فِي الْقَائِمِ وَأَصْحَابِهِ. This verse has been revealed about Imam Mahdi alayhi salam and his companions. Al-Ghiba by Nu'mani, page 240, and also Tafsir Qummi, volume 1, page 14. So we talked about some of the features in the government of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, and through those explanations, it is now very easy to understand.
Very natural to believe that there would be a peace of mind.
Exactly, and security in all its forms. At the end of the previous session, you said that Imam will have a kind of control over the hearts of the people. Mm-hmm. And also, I refer to one narration according to which Imam Mahdi alayhi salam will bring a kind of mercy to all the people. So not only the Imam will act upon justice himself, people will feel compassionate toward each other
too. His civilians are going to act accordingly.
So when you have such people, it is very normal and natural to feel
security
among the people. So this is one of the, we can say that this security is one of the fruits of justice of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam.
Because when there is no war, when there is no robbery, when there is no more of the things that are alike, there would be, of course, security
Definitely.
And safety.
And there are some details about this security which are mentioned in the narrations, and that would be interesting to share some of them.
For sure.
For example, Imam Ali al-Salam is quoted as saying, لَوْ قَدْ قَامَ قَائِمُونَ لَأَنْدَلَتَ السَّمَاءُ قَطْرَهَا. When Imam Mahdi al-Salam reappears, first of all, Imam talks about the fact that we will have blessings like rain. And the other point is that لَذَهَبَتِ الشَّحْنَاءُ مِنْ قُلُوبِ الْعِبَادِ. This is very interesting. Grudge leaves the hearts of the people. So this is another fruit of the government of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. Because maybe people will, some people may act upon justice, but not, freely. They may feel forced to do that. But this narration is saying that no, لَا ذَهَبَتِ الشَّحْنَاءُ مِنْ قُلُوبِ الْعِبَادِ. Hatred, grudge are not in the hearts of the people anymore. So if you feel compassionate toward other people, naturally you will act upon justice accordingly. وَاصْطَلَحَتِ السَّبَاعُ وَالْبَهَائِمُ. This part is very also interesting. Even the beasts, they get along at that time. Now, regarding the security, specifically about security, this part of the narration is very interesting. So, safety and security will be there to the extent that حَتَّى تَمْشِ الْمَرْأَةُ بَيْنَ الْحِرَاقِ إِلَى الشَّامِ لَا تَدَوَ قَدَمَيْهَا إِلَّا عَلَى النَّبَدْ وَعَلَى رَأْسَهَ زِينَتُهَا لَا يُهَجِّهَا سَبَعٌ وَلَا تَخَافُ. To the extent that a woman may travel from Iraq to Syria, which, I mean, this is a kind of example, with all her jewelry, without having any kind of worrying or any kind of fear. Nowadays, at night, in many countries, women may not
even
men in some neighborhood to go out after, sunset, for example. So we are talking about, and we know that when Imam Mahdi is talking about women with all jewelry from one country to another, he's just putting emphasis on the fact that we have absolute security at that time. So as a woman with all your properties, you may travel from
freely,
one country to another
without worrying about your safety.
Without any worry, yeah. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is also quoted as saying, when Imam Mahdi alayhi salam reappears, he will act upon justice and there is no oppression anymore. Wa amanat bihis subul. The roads will be safe. This is another narration in this regard, I'lam al-Wara, page 462, and Kashf al-Ghumma, volume 3, page 465.